presented by the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of June 25th, 2019. And this is episode number 397. And of course, this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we are live on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. And this week, we've got a lot of news. There's a lot of stuff going on out there. I don't know. It's weird. I had a couple of weeks off before, and it seemed like nothing was happening. All of a sudden, this last week, it's been crazy. Even today, I'm going to talk about a kind of a late-breaking story. Actually, a couple of pretty late-breaking stories I finally got my hands on. I heard a couple of rumors about some of this, and we're going to talk about some late-breaking stories as well as a lot of other stuff going on tonight here on the Paranormal News Insider. So, yeah, we're going to talk Black Panthers on the loose down under. We're also going to talk about a pair of UFO sightings in the Midwest that might be related, but the government doesn't want you to know about that. But don't worry, because I'm going to tell you. Yes, I'm going to tell you all about it. And I've helped one of the few people that have connected the dots out there. There's a few people that have really helped out and led that way. And not everyone's getting this right. It's kind of confusing, but we're going to put it all together for you tonight. You might have also heard about the U.S. senators briefed on UFO activity. We'll talk about that. And another new show is going to go where we've all wanted to go. Well, some of us, at least we're, you know, we'll see where we want to see where cameras can go. Maybe not all of us want to go to this particular spot, but we'll take a look at that new show. And just want to remind you, you can reach the show or find out what's going on with the show and all the stuff I'm going to talk about tonight. I'll be sharing through links throughout the week, the upcoming week, through social media, including Facebook, which is Facebook / Paranews Insider, as well as Twitter, which is at Paranews Insider. And, yeah, Instagram as well. I don't really post story stuff on Instagram. That's more or less from about actually out in the field or at an event or something like that. So keep an eye on Facebook and Twitter. I try to keep it simple for everybody out there. I'm a little bit behind. It seems like I say this every week. I'm a little bit behind on updating my events listing for 2019. There's a couple that I heard about that I got to get in there to get updated tonight, but hopefully I'll have that updated before I get my beauty rest tonight. After the show, I'll be updating all kinds of stuff, and hopefully I'll get to that. And what else is going on? Well, I'm a little UFO hungover. I don't know if there's such a thing, but last night I was at the Pickaway County Public Library talking about UFOs. As well as the culture behind our beliefs with UFOs. And it was part of their A Universe of Stories Week, which featured a lot of other presenters, a lot of other events, a lot of really cool stuff. Astronomers, they had all sorts of different people that were down there. It was a really, really interesting week. And I was really honored that they'd asked me to come down and talk about UFOs. And what's interesting as well is there's actually a UFO group that meets down at the Pickaway County Public Library. I think they said every third Thursday, I think, guessing. I don't know. You can find out more about it. If you're in the area and you're into UFOs, these are an interesting group of people that you might want to talk to about your sightings or at least your interest in that field. If you're anywhere near Circleville or Pickaway County, down in southern Ohio. Well, I guess it is kind of southern Ohio. It's south of Columbus, anyway. And I had a blast coming home from that, going down there. It was pouring rain just before I hit there. And on the pretty much all the way home, it was pouring rain. I was trying to race a storm system, and I pretty much just raced myself right into the middle of it. So flooding and heavy rains, always fun to drive through that. And you may not know this, but yesterday was a pretty important day. I guess it's important, but it's a pretty big day for UFOs. Ufology, UFology, whatever you want to say, however you want to say it, it's up to you. A little special way to say it. UFOs, UFOs, it's up to you. All right, I don't make this stuff up. You can say however you want. But yesterday, June 24th, Monday, that marked the 72nd anniversary of the Kenneth Arnold UFO sighting in Mount Rainier, Washington. Kenneth Arnold saw 9 UFOs flying in the sky while he was piloting his own aircraft. And this is a pretty big deal. This is pretty much, this is kind of the one that started it all, I would have to say. And this particular individual sighting led to the term flying saucers, as well as flying disc. When as far as flying saucers is concerned, he used that to describe the movement of the craft, but not the craft itself. It's interesting stuff. But that's the media for you. They take whatever you say, and they twist it to fit their own needs. That's what they do. And that's for some of us. June 24th also marks National UFO Day. I look at it for that, and I was all excited about this because when I first found out that I was speaking at the Pickaway County Public Library on June 24th, for some reason I knew there was something about that day, and it took me a couple of weeks actually to remember what that was, and I was really, really excited about it. And lo and behold, when I asked the crowd if anybody knew what was big about that day, one of the UFO group people raised his hand, and he said, yes, today is Kenneth Arnold's sighting, the anniversary. So I was really excited that people know about this. Now, not everybody celebrates June 24th as National UFO Day because a lot of people prefer July 2nd. And why July 2nd? Well, that marks the anniversary of the purported Roswell UFO crash. But many consider Kenneth Arnold's sighting to be the beginning of modern-day UFO sighting reports, as well as responsible for bringing these sightings to the public spotlight. And if you pick up any book on UFO sightings, pretty much a majority of them, if not all of them, I know my book, Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator, which was on display at the library yesterday, I also start out with that sighting. And I really feel that it's the beginning of modern-day sightings. It really started it all. Not just because it was a sighting, but because it was publicized. And also that Kenneth Arnold used a little bit of science in it. And he could determine speed and the fact that when he saw it, he saw a flash initially, and he thought it was an oncoming aircraft. So he quickly tried to locate any moving objects, which is, as a pilot, is a difficult thing because you're flying along at a particular speed, and everything else that's flying around you is moving, and obviously you're moving through the sky, so everything is moving, and you're just trying to figure out things that are moving in reference to your movement. And he did see a DC-9 in the distance, and thought that's just too far away for what I saw. And then he saw another flash, and lo and behold, he saw a line of 9 objects, which of course the government tried to explain that away as a variety of things, including geese. I believe it was geese or ducks or something. They tried to say that it was, but he determined their speed to be very, very fast, extremely fast, faster than any known aircraft of the time, which is interesting because that's all we're hearing about right now in 2019. Aircraft or objects that are doing things that we can't do in our modern craft. So strange how history is repeating itself. I'll talk a lot. Tonight we've got a lot of UFO stories, so we're going to dive headfirst into the UFO mania that's sweeping the United States right now. We'll cover a couple of stories, including a late-breaking UFO release. You might not have heard about this, but we're going to talk about it tonight, kind of put it in a little bit of perspective for you. I'm sure it'll be splashed all over the place tomorrow on a lot of these social media sites. Actually, I think it's already hit one of the paranormal news sites out there, but we're going to talk about it tonight anyway. One other piece of information I want to throw out there. I'm kind of proud of this. I'm excited. I just got a magazine in the mail last night when I came home late from my event, and it's actually a magazine where I wrote a review, a book review for a book called Investigating Ghosts, The Scientific Search for Spirits, which was written by Benjamin Radford. This book actually came out in early 2018, and it's a follow-up to his scientific paranormal investigation book, which was kind of just general paranormal stuff. And now this one, the Investigating Ghosts, obviously focuses solely on ghosts, solely, no pun intended there. The review appears in the July-August edition of Skeptical Inquirer magazine. Yes, you heard me right. Skeptical Inquirer magazine. Now, last night at the Pickaway County Public Library, I talked about how those of us who research these topics that weigh heavily on subjective opinion and beliefs and folklore and different things that are kind of, well, they're all subjective for the most part. We all need to make an effort to create as much balance in our work as possible, especially our research, how we present our information. So reviewing skeptical claims is healthy. It's a healthy thing for anyone to do, especially for those of us who believe in ghosts, UFOs, or cryptozoology. Now, my review of Investigating Ghosts follows that theme and explains why everyone who considers themselves a ghost researcher, investigator, or I guess ghost hunter is another term that people use, they need to get this book. You need to get this book and read it all the way through before you launch it up against the wall. Yeah, it's frustrating, but sometimes the truth hurts. And there's a lot of things that ghost investigators are doing wrong. And a lot of people say, well, there's no right or wrong way to investigate. And they sound exactly like that. There's no wrong way to investigate. They sound exactly like that. They do. But there is wrong ways. And a lot of people are doing the wrong thing because they see it on TV. And they want to emulate that. Well, anyway, this book will help you. Trust me. Benjamin Radford is, I guess you could call him a skeptic. He is a skeptic, and we should all be skeptical. But him as a skeptic, he's not out to say that ghosts don't exist. He wants to help the field. He truly does. I really feel that. I know he's helped me a lot in my research and just asking questions. And, of course, from reading all of his material, I don't get the feeling that he's trying to say it's all bogus. But Benjamin Radford is, he's trying to help us. He really is. And so his books won't hurt you. They might not make you happy, but he speaks the truth from a scientific point of view. Again, the July-August edition of Skeptical Inquirer, volume 43, issue number 4, which should be on newsstands, I think, next week. Hopefully the week after. Should be coming soon. Should be next week. Now, I was lucky to have my book, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist, was actually reviewed in that magazine a couple of years ago as well, but it was a small article, and this one I actually got to write. It's 2 pages. It's pretty exciting. I know it's skeptical, but trust me, it's we need to balance ourselves as researchers and investigators. I truly think that that's the smart approach, is to look at both sides. And it's so easy just to go ahead and look at material, look at information that goes with what you believe. Anybody can do that. But it's hard to try to balance your thoughts and look at other aspects to see whether or not you can find a balance to it. And you know, it's sad though. Yeah, I've seen people who were pretty decent ghost researchers just all of a sudden just become hardcore skeptics. And by hardcore, I mean people who are just obscene about it. People who will blatantly bash other people, publicly call them out, and just berate other people for their beliefs, and just say how dumb and wrong everyone is because science, science, science. And there's just no room for that. And that's actually not really helpful. But people who are skeptical can be a help. You know, when every group talks about, oh, we have a group skeptic. Well, that's worthless because everybody should be skeptical of all the information, all the things that are going on. If you're just believing everything you see and everything you hear and everything you experience, you're doing it wrong because you have to be able to step back and see things objectively as much as you can. It's impossible to go out into the field and be completely objective. It's not how things work. I get that. Been there. But you can pull yourself back a little bit, especially in your thought process. But yeah, there are some skeptics out there that it doesn't matter what they think. You could present them a ghost. You could put a Bigfoot in a bag and let it loose in their kitchen, and they're still going to deny it's there. They will. There's just some people that are that closed-minded, but a lot of skeptical people will look at believers as being closed-minded as well. So with that, we're going to jump into the news because we got a lot tonight. There's a lot to cover, a lot of ground, and we're going to kick it off with cryptid news. I had three different stories that I wanted to lead off tonight with, but this one just landed in my lap not too long ago and decided to run with this one. I like this. I'm big into black cats. What can I say? Now, in my recent appearance at the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, I talked about big cat sightings as well as black panthers. Now, let me kind of explain some stuff. So black panthers are not a distinct species. It's black panthers, not a type of cat. It's the melanistic variant of cats in the Panthera species. Now, the Panthera species includes lions, tigers, not bears, lions, tigers, jaguars, leopards, and for some people, snow leopards as well. And of these, only jaguars and leopards have been seen all melanistic, so all black, completely melanistic, not fake melanistic. So with that, we have, that's it, jaguars and leopards. And for those of us here in the Americas, North and South America, we got those jaguars. And then, of course, leopards are Africa and Asia. And very, very remote, very, very low percentages of these cats are actually melanistic. And yes, it's melanistic is completely opposite of albino, which is all white, pink eyes. But these cats still have their greenish eyes for whatever reason. It's kind of interesting. See if I get this right. The jaguars have green, and I believe the leopards are yellow, I believe. Don't quote me on that. I'm probably wrong. It's going off of memory. But albinos, I'm not sure if I've ever seen an albino big cat. I know there's a lot of fake pictures of tigers and different cats online. Now, there is a white lion, but I think those are bred that way, and it's not really truly melanistic. It's just the way they breed them. But back to the melanistic cat. So they're all black, but they're not completely black. So they're not jet black. A lot of people think they're just completely black. You can still see their markings on their fur. So if they have stripes or they have spots, you can actually see those. You got to get kind of close. So you better have some cat treats if you want to get that close, or you probably become a cat treat if you get that close, unless they're unfortunately enclosed. Now, black hat sightings are pretty popular here in the United States. Also in the United Kingdom, they're kind of known as alien black cats or ABCs for all of you that like to, sing the song, ABC. And other locations that should not have big cats, including Australia. Now, last Thursday, Chris Trees was riding his mountain bike near Mount Sugarloaf in New South Wales, Australia, when he saw a large black cat jump out of a red gum tree. I've never seen a red gum tree, but it sounds exciting. Now, of his encounter, Trees said, quote, "It was easily the size of a Rottweiler. It had a big, black, bushy tail. It scared the..." Well, let's just say he said something similar to loaf out of me, unquote. And, giving a more descriptive view of his encounter here, he says, quote, "I go to the top of Sugarloaf and ride my mountain bike down. It's about 2 kilometers along Sugarloaf Range Road. There's a turnoff after the first small aerial tower. I was coming down there on Thursday at about 2:30 p.m. I was probably 200 meters along. I've come to a stop because I need to adjust my front brake. I look up and saw something drop from a tree about 25 meters away. The head shape was definitely the shape of a cat. The body size was like a big black dog, and it had a really long cat-like tail. I couldn't see its eyes at the distance. I thought, what the heck is that? That looks like a panther of sorts. And after about 5 seconds of staring at me, it turned around and bolted in the other direction. It moved really fast, running off through the brush." Unquote. He said he then watched it run into the distance before it ultimately disappeared. And, of course, people are going to say, well, why didn't he get a picture of the creature? I believe he called his sister, and that was the first thing she asked him. "Not, are you okay? Not that it attack you, but did you get a picture?" But he said he was worried at first that it might come after him, and that he was fixated on the sheer size of the creature. He had heard of the black cat reports in nearby areas, but never at Sugarloaf, Mount Sugarloaf. And Mount Sugarloaf, if you're thinking about a map, New South Wales is on the eastern side of Australia, kind of the southeastern part, and it's about 2 hours of a drive north of Sydney, Australia. So it's pretty close to a major metro area there. It's possible that many large cats live free in the outback of Australia, and just like probably here in the United States and in England, they're truly out there, more than likely, these are ones that were let loose by humans. It's possible they could be breeding out there, but more than likely, they're probably just lone survivors hanging out there on their own. So that's your black cat report. I kind of already did mention two weeks ago about the Ogopogo creature, Lake Okanagan. Some guys saw little waves. It wasn't really nothing major. And then I was going to talk about that crazy lady with the Bigfoot in her backyard, but I opted not to. It's a little weird story, but she's feeding it candy bars. Says the Bigfoot likes junk food. I'm not sure about that. Now, I've heard about Tootsie Rolls. Somebody told me about that years ago. Feed them Tootsie Rolls. But I guess apparently she said they don't like apples or other fruit, but they like candy. I'm not sure about that. Anyway, UFO news. We're going to probably spend the entire rest of the show talking about UFOs. It's a big deal. It's we've come a long way with that. And before I get too far into it, just in case I kind of lose my train of thought here, I do want to say that it's kind of funny. You know, we're talking about, I started my presentation, I talked a little bit about the history of UFOs and really the culture of our obsession, more or less, with UFOs. And you think about how many movies have come out about UFOs over the years. You can, I mean, you go all the way back to, you know, predating Kenneth Arnold's sighting of 1947. And, I mean, we got War of the Worlds, for crying out loud. That was a big deal. It was a magazine article back in 1897, became a hardcover book in 1898. And, of course, it's probably most well-known for the 1938 radio play by Orson Welles, where a little, you know, some people got a little caught up in the fact that it was put on as a kind of a news announcement that there was an invasion in progress. Some people panicked. Maybe they never read the book, I guess. But after Kenneth Arnold's sighting, yeah, there was plenty of movies. The Flying Saucer, 1950. It Came from Outer Space, 1953. But you can also look back before that, before these UFO sightings. And one of the biggest superheroes for those of us who live in the Cleveland, Ohio area, is Superman. Yeah, Superman was not born on Krypton. He was actually born in Cleveland, Ohio, in a manner of speaking. He was created here. So we kind of love that. So Action Comics Superman made its debut back in 1933. And this was kind of a different take, because up until that point, and for the most part afterwards, people are afraid of UFOs. They're afraid of aliens. But here comes this dude from another planet that blew up, and he comes down here and starts wreaking havoc. I mean, the real Superman of back in that time, he was more like, it's kind of more like Batman, not the rich, spoiled little brat Batman, but kind of the vigilante kind of Batman. So he was, you know, beating everybody up and trying to save the common folk. And you also had John Carter of Mars. I believe that one came out in 1940 as a comic book. So kids were already getting into this stuff back in the 1930s and 40s. And then, of course, you had Kenneth Arnold's sighting in 1947, and it all kind of took off from there. And, you know, we don't have to look too far to see some of the stuff that's been going on. I mean, if you haven't been paying attention this year, one of the biggest movies, and they're gunning for it. They're trying to get the number one by re-releasing a movie. Avengers Endgame is coming out again. They're re-releasing it. I don't know. It's just weird. They're just trying to dethrone Avatar, and Avatar is the number one. Depends on who you ask. There's a couple of different versions of this. Total box office dollars. Now, if you adjust it, there's Gone with the Wind is technically number one. But Avatar, number one, is again, what is that about? It's about aliens. So we got a lot of movies up there. And if you look at the top four, four of the top five are actually about aliens. Marvel Cinematic Universe has a whole bunch in the top 100. There's 37 out of the top 100 movies are about aliens of some sort. 37% of the top 100 movies. So obviously, people enjoy thinking about aliens and UFOs and things from outer space. It's there. I mean, granted, yes, Star Wars, E.T., Independence Day, all those are also up there. And yeah, that DC, they've got Superman and Wonder Woman and a bunch of other stuff. She's not an alien. She's not an alien. You look on the other side of the coin, the adjusted for inflation, it's only 26, but still 26% of movies being about aliens. That's still, to me, that's a huge deal. I mean, you can add up all the movies about ghosts, and in that listing, you have The Exorcist, which is pretty high up there, and as well as Ghostbusters is on that list as well. You add up all those ghost movies and whatever cryptid movies, there's none in the top 100 that I saw. None. King Kong? No, not there. Godzilla? No, not there. Not in the top 100. But if you add all those movies up, I don't think it touches movies and even TV shows about aliens. So it's part of our culture. It's really ingrained in who we are and what we do. And, you know, it's kind of funny kind of round up my thought here, that the term UFO was actually created by the government back in the 1950s. It was part of the U.S. Air Force regulations. They created the term. Granted, back then it was UFOB, unidentified flying object. And their definition, it's pretty much kind of what's going on now. It's pretty much an object seen that we cannot identify. It does not look or act like anything that we currently have technology for, but it doesn't really refer to something that's alien technology. So it's not saying that it's from outer space or extraterrestrial origin. And that's kind of where we are right now. And, you know, a lot of us are sitting around thinking, well, you know, when's the government going to, you know, say more? Well, I think the government's saying a lot, and they're telling us that they're taking this stuff seriously, that they're really looking at it. And what's funny is now the government is the center of UFO research. And no longer are, you know, people out there picketing for more information and complaining about disclosure. Now the government is the one saying all this. So I feel like we've kind of come full circle at this point right now. And it makes you wonder, what's around the corner? What's coming up next? Yeah. I see the word skinwalkers. Skinwalkers in the chat room. We're going to talk about those here in a second. Stay tuned for that. Uh-oh. Skinwalkers. Not the biggest topic I always talk about, but we'll talk about that here in a second. So, you know, we tend to think, you know, those of us here in the United States, and I do appreciate you, though. I know there's not a huge portion, but I know there's some people out there that do listen to the show that are from other countries, the United Kingdom, even Australia, as well as other European countries. I do appreciate you listening to the show. I really do. And, you know, I try not to take too much of a egocentric view of the world of the paranormal. You know, a lot of this stuff obviously is here in the United States, but I do try to get a worldview, because it's not just us that are seeing aircraft, strange things in the sky that we can't explain. We're not the only ones with ghostly encounters. We're not the only ones with wild, large ape creatures walking around that we can't figure out what they are. We're not the only ones dealing with all these problems. And this ties in with our first UFO news story. That is probably the longest segue I've ever had for a story in history of this show. But anyway, it comes to us from South America. And I just started reading this story. I didn't really have time to really break it apart. And I saw it on a different website, and I wasn't sure how to take it, so I had to do some research and dig into it and find the original link and translate it and read it and try to interpret it, because translation doesn't always work out so well. And it's from Argentina. Now, Argentina has basically recently, very recently, just essentially last week, has confirmed that the government down there in, actually it's Peru. What did I say Argentina for? I'm not sure. Don't cry for me, Argentina. But CNN is reporting, actually CNN Espanol is reporting that back on February 27th at 1:30 in the morning, close to the Jorge Chavez International Airport in the city of Lima, there were two very luminous, unidentified flying objects that were seen about five nautical miles away at approximately 2,400 meters. And two different commercial flights were preparing to take off, and they noticed this and radioed air traffic control about this. And this incident went on for about 40 minutes. And there's actually radar data to support this. So this is some pretty interesting stuff that's happening in South America. And for the government to come out and say that, hey, we have, Yeah, it is Peru. So the Peruvian Air Force has come clean and come out and said, hey, we did see this. And we did document this. We have information. And CNN has been able to dig into this and read through this. So this is kind of a big deal. So it's not just us. It's not Argentina. It's Peru. Let me correct that. Peru. You know, we tend to think of it's just the United States that when we're visited that these spaceships are going to come down and they're either going to land on the White House lawn or they're going to blow up New York City, you know, like in all the movies and stuff. But the United States is not the center of the world. And again, these things are happening everywhere. And it's really interesting because many countries in South America, even Central America, have a very heavily belief system towards UFOs, and they're very fearful of these things, and they do cover them quite a bit on the news stations with a little bit less tongue-in-cheek than we do typically here in the United States, although it's kind of loosened up a lot. You know, we were talking last night at the Pickaway County Public Library about how years ago you'd hear about a UFO report, you had to wait till the last segment, you know, and they'd start talking about it, they'd be laughing and giggling in the news studio. And the X-Files theme would start to play, and it would have gimmicks or jokes or props or something, and they'd just kind of make fun of it. And it was just laughed at, and then they go to commercial. And it was no big deal. But now it seems like it's really, I mean, one of the times I was actually watching CNN, and they started talking about UFOs, and I'm just staring at the TV, and I start laughing. I'm like, I can't believe this is actually being taken seriously by the media. They're very serious about this stuff now. I mean, I never thought I'd see the day, but here it is. And now, again, it's not just here. This is a pretty big deal that Peru has come forward. Their Air Force has confirmed that they did, in fact, have multiple witnesses to a UFO sighting back in February 27th of this year. So that's a kind of a big deal. And I'm kind of excited about that. I think that's a really interesting story. And we'll continue to follow that to see if there's any more details that come out. I was a little skeptical because of the places that I saw this story at first, but did get my hands on the link and read a little bit more about it. It's actually on CNN, Espanol, but pretty cool information. And if you guys want, I'll throw that link out in the chat room. And don't forget, if you missed it earlier on, during the week, I will be sharing all of these links through social media. So through Facebook. So Paranews Insider is the Facebook. So facebook.com/ Paranews Insider, as well as through Twitter. That is at Paranews Insider. And I link them both together. So anything I do on one is going to appear on the other. So fear not, if you're not listening live or not in the chat room, you'll still have access to these stories. And moving along here, this is a really big story that I've been really excited to talk about. This has taken me a lot of time to get through this and research all this stuff. But last Tuesday, a floating object in the sky got a little bit of attention from residents in Butler County, Ohio, which is just north of Cincinnati, which is Cincinnati is down there at the southern, kind of almost the southwestern portion there of Ohio. Numerous people reported seeing a white object floating through the sky, a very high altitude. So a little white dot flying through the sky. People couldn't figure out what this was. More than one person was able to get a decent photograph of the object, which would think that there would be an easy and a logical solution to this. But unfortunately, not the case. And luckily, not only did people get pictures of this, but a gentleman actually had a telescope attached to his camera. So here's one picture I'll throw in the chat room real quick. So if you're in the chat room, you're going to see a picture pop up here. And that is not a jet. I know what you're thinking. It's not swamp gas. Now, that appears to be some sort of balloon. So the first initial reaction by a lot of people, was a weather balloon or other objects similar to that. And unfortunately, it's kind of irritating because some of the news stations actually jumped to conclusions about this. Imagine that. So there's a closer view. So this gentleman actually had a camera attached to a telescope. He was able to get kind of follow this object in the sky and get that pretty close picture. So we can probably try to figure out what that thing is that we're looking at there. And again, we're looking at it from underneath it. So it looks a little different than what it would be if you were up there in the sky with it. Now, one picture in particular that we're looking at, the second picture I put in the chat room, it's a pretty close-up image of a white circular object. It's got some kind of like lines on it, but it's kind of like a clear, almost like a large garbage bag, circular garbage bag, I guess you'd say, but it's got little circles in it. There's a kind of a darker white area inside of it, and if you look really, really close, there's actually other object right there in the center of that attached to this kind of balloon looking thing. Now, this particular picture was submitted by Taylor Cup to WHIO TV Channel 7 out of Dayton, Ohio. His picture zoomed in and clear of this white object, where a lot of other pictures show a white dot in the sky. Just any regular camera, even zoomed in, just showing a white dot. This thing is high up in the air. Taylor captured a great look at this object, showing some really good detail. And again, we can tell it's some sort of balloon that looks like kind of like a parachute, I guess you could say, too. Now, initial reports about this story from a majority of the news stations in the area pointed toward a company called Loon. Loon, like the bird, the loon. And said that this was a loon balloon. I guess that's what they call it. It's pretty smart. These loon balloons give people LTE cell phone coverage, especially to people in remote locations or following a natural disaster or large power outage. So there are people in the Dayton area, which is basically just west of this area, that are dealing with still reeling from tornado damage, for some heavy tornadoes that tore through the area around Memorial Day weekend. So there is some power outage still in effect. So it's possible that that's what it was for. However, one area journalist, or I should say one newspaper, really pushed it to figure this out. So they actually contacted Loon, and Loon said that it wasn't their balloon. Even though all the other networks in the area were pushing to say that this was solved, that it definitely was this Loon company. Well, it wasn't, according to them. So the National Weather Service was asked if maybe it was one of their balloons, and they responded by saying they have no idea what the object was. Again, back to Loon, Scott Curiel of Loon said, quote, "I checked in with our flight team, and this was not one of our balloons. We fly balloons worldwide, including over most parts of the U.S., but at the time of your sightings, we did not have any in the region," unquote. He did say that he also believes that the object was a balloon based on the photographs he had seen of the object, and it could be from another company in the area. So they contacted another company in the area, Worldview Enterprises, which also launches balloons, but it was also not responsible for the object in the sky. So some had wondered, maybe, just maybe, if it had something to do with Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which is also to the west, but they were unaware of the object as well. And like I mentioned, it's pretty strange. Other media reports in the area were and still are. I just checked earlier today. They're still stating matter-of-factly that this was a launch made by Loon, despite the confirmation that it was not. It's really, I don't know, it's just irritating to me that you're journalists and you're not reporting the story correctly. Are they covering something up? It's possible. Maybe they are. The Journal News did their own research, which kept the story alive over the last few days. And on Friday, they finally got a clue as to what the objects might have been. This is when it gets a little scary, or maybe you could say dark. So the U.S. Department's U.S. Department of Defense's Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which may ring a bell to you. It's also known as DARPA. Now, DARPA launched three balloons from Cumberland, Maryland, from what is called their Adaptable Lighter-Than-Air Program, or ALTA. Everything's an acronym. The ALTA balloons are able to take advantage of air currents at various elevations in order to change direction by using onboard sensors that provide real-time stratospheric wind measurements. So, kind of in short, with the science aside, I'll throw a little science here. So, essentially, we know here in the United States, our wind primarily, especially here in Ohio, goes from west to east. Sometimes we get stuff off the Gulf, and so it kind of would go in a northeast pattern. But generally, the winds are going from the west to east. The jet stream travels west to east. So how could these balloons be traveling east? Well, they take advantage of upper winds. So the upper winds above the jet stream actually travel the opposite direction. They're not as strong, but they do travel in the opposite direction. So this balloon actually has these instruments that can raise or lower the entire object in order to hit the correct winds to carry it in whatever direction it wants, or to stand still if need be. It's a little spooky when you think about that, actually. Now, a strange event also occurred, a very similar event, so this is strange. Last Thursday, over the skies of Kansas City, Missouri, a number of people reported seeing a white object high in the sky. Some photographs were taken, and the National Weather Service was again stumped as what it could be. Jared Adams, who is the chief of communications for the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, essentially confirmed that the sighting belonged to them. As he said, quote, "Given the location, it is likely a balloon and a flight test for the Adaptable Lighter-Than-Air Program." Via an email to 41 Action News, a spokesperson also stated that the object seen in Ohio was more than likely a DARPA balloon as well. Granted, they weren't very specific about it, and you can't blame them. I mean, they're not likely to give too much information about this project. I mean, essentially, these are being developed for national security. So national security is their focus at DARPA. Now, if you've heard of DARPA, you can't really remember what it is. DARPA was initially known as ARPA, the Advanced Research Projects Agency. It was created in 1958 by President Dwight D. Eisenhower in reaction to the Soviet's launch of Sputnik back in 1957. And then, of course, it added the D there for defense. And actually, they took it away a little bit ago and put it back on for whatever reason. So that's what these objects are. And obviously, they're headed west for whatever reason. And we'll continue to keep an eye out or an ear out or both to see if anybody else spots these in the sky. Pretty interesting. And we're not supposed to know about it. And they're not really coming right out and saying anything about it. They did actually tweet that they did release these balloons prior to these sightings. But obviously, they didn't say where they were going. But people have located them. But it's one of those things we're not supposed to know about. So it's pretty cool that people have figured this out. Some people have figured this out. And other people the sheeple, just kind of went along with whatever they thought it was. So interesting stuff. And again, I'll continue to keep an eye out for that to see if the story continues to evolve. Now, Butler County, there in southern Ohio, Cincinnati area, a very rich history of UFO reports. But really and truly, that is due to the great skills of the famed area researcher, wonderful young man, Kenny Young, who sadly passed away from leukemia back in 2005. He was actually an inspiration for me reading this guy's stuff. He's just phenomenal, a phenomenal researcher, sorely missed in the UFO field. and did a heck of a job down there in southern Ohio and Kentucky, documenting hundreds of UFO sightings in that region. And it just makes you wonder, of all the other areas that people are doing this kind of work, what is going on in the skies? So using balloons to spy on people, not a new thing. As a matter of fact, and people are going to throw stuff at me and probably type bad words in the chat room, but that's okay. The whole Roswell thing was in fact a balloon. There were governments covering that up because this balloon could detect a nuclear bomb going off on the other side of the planet. We didn't want anybody to know that we could do that, nor do we want people to know that we're floating balloons over their country. Not to mention that the United States has had balloons from other countries. A Japanese balloon over Oregon was carrying live munitions. I believe it actually blew up. It was dropped and blew up. Caused a fire a long time ago. So, yeah, we're doing it. Other countries are doing it. It's real stuff. And whatever they're using this for, or planning to use this thing, this DARPA balloon for, I don't know. But it's kind of scary to think about this thing floating over the skies. And I'll go ahead and throw a link there in the chat room real quick for some of the story. There's a lot of links. I probably got about 20 links for the story for different the different news stations and people thinking that it was the loon balloon and all these other things. But, yeah, this stuff is not, you know, we look at this and we think, this is old technology. But I tell you what, you launch something here, we can fly something anywhere we want without using any kind of fuel. This thing just goes on the wind. And we could take this thing pretty much anywhere. That's pretty scary. All right. Now, if that wasn't big enough news in the world of UFOs, then you probably saw the headlines last week where U.S. senators were briefed on UFOs. And again, this is amazing. This is a big story, not just for us in the paranormal, but for the mainstream media. And like I said, yes, UFOs were discussed by the national media without laughing or playing the X-Files theme. They're actually straight-faced and are arguing with each other and yelling at each other and like freaked out about this. Now, a classified briefing took place last Wednesday where a group of senators were briefed on the reported encounters with unidentified aircraft. Joseph Redisher, spokesman for the Deputy Chief of Naval Operations on Information Warfare, stated, quote, Navy officials did indeed meet with interested congressional members and staffers on Wednesday to provide a classified brief on efforts to understand and identify these threats to the safety and security of our aviators, unquote. Now, you may have also heard President Donald Trump's reaction, where he admitted he was briefed on the reports, but told ABC News, quote, I did have one very brief meeting on it, but people are saying they're seeing UFOs. Do I believe it? Not particularly, he says. So, yeah, I don't know. I think he's got the wrong context here. And again, the big context, which is funny because they're using these terms, UFO. All the media, all these things on the front covers of magazines, all these things everywhere on TV, they're using the term UFO. And yes, the Air Force did create that term. They invented it, and they should own it. But they're trying to sidestep it because of the connotation, the connection between the term UFO and alien-powered aircraft. That's not what we're talking about here. This isn't all about extraterrestrials visiting Earth. These are about threats to national security. These are objects that are potentially launched by other countries, or maybe people here in the United States. We just don't even know who's doing what or what these objects are for or from, and they're a threat, a potential threat, and we're not sure. So that's really the focus here, and it's to not make people think that they're going to lose their jobs or be grounded, because as an airman, if you go to somebody and say, hey, I saw a weird light in the sky, you're pretty much grounded. And you're going to get a desk. You'll be flying a desk around the office, not a jet anymore. So they wanted to take that away because they want to know what's going on in the skies. Not so much about little green men flying saucers around the skies, but there's a lot of weird objects that people are seeing, and they're afraid to report it. And that's what this is all about. Again, UFOs are kind of being taken out of context here. So, you know, if you saw a UAS or UAP on the front headline of a story online, it's not very sexy. You're not going to click on it. Ooh, a UAS. That sounds exciting. An unmanned aerial system. That sounds awesome. Or unidentified aerial phenomenon, UAP. Ooh. No, people want to see UFO because that sells. It sells cars. It sells clicks. It sells links. It sells everything. UFOs is a sexy word, so people are going to want to use that. The Navy, again, trying to distance themselves from that UFO term because it does imply aliens piloting crafts. And that's what I'm sure President Trump thought about when he was briefed on this. He probably wasn't listening. In reality, again, they could be seeing technology used by foreign countries that are entering our airspace undetected by technology which presents itself as a national security threat. Again, the announcement came back in April that the Navy would listen to these reports, and it sparked a resurgence in UFOs, even though the report was geared towards wanting the airmen to not be afraid to come forward with any type of report, although it points toward the explanation that there are potential threats by human technology and not so much by little green men. So one last story for you. Well, I'll try to work in two. Let's see. No, I got one. We're just going to go with the one. History Channel was just host to the series Project Blue Book. It seems like so long ago. I don't know. It seems so long ago. It was beginning of the year. And they're going to be back sometime with season two. We don't know. I don't know when, but pretty soon. Now, another announcement by the network is that the creator of The Curse of Oak Island, as well as Ancient Aliens, Kevin Burns, will soon release a new series where he will be, quote, gaining full and unprecedented access to one of the most infamous and secret hotspots of paranormal and UFO-related activities on Earth, unquote. I didn't say it. That's what they said. But it sounds exciting, right? So where is this place? It will be finally lifting the veil on one of the most talked about locations where there's really very little information. I know a lot of people are interested in this. I didn't really care about this, all this stuff. I hear people getting all worked up about it and all sweaty and excited. And I just don't know enough about this. So this is going to be interesting to kind of lift that veil on this location. So what is the title of this new project? Well, they don't have a final title at this point. They have a working title. And so this may change in the future. But right now, the working title of this project is called The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. So again, that might not be the final title, but I think that's going to scare up enough viewers to mark their calendars when an announcement is made for this show's premiere. So, The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch, coming soon to the History Channel. And if you don't know what Skinwalker Ranch is, well, just keep it brief here. It's located in Utah, 512 acres of property. The area is known for many, many UFO sightings and a slew of other types of paranormal activity. And Skinwalker Ranch, it gets its name from the Native American legend of shape-shifting creatures known as the Skinwalker. And that may sound interesting enough, but there's even more mystery behind this location. The ranch was bought back in 1996 by billionaire Robert Bigelow, who's been involved in the UFO field for many, many years and kind of been the center of controversy around some stuff and still is. He had his hand in MUFON's pockets, and now he's got his hands in our little Blink-182 dude with the our new group that's taken over the world, it seems like, of UFOs. And a few years ago, this is where it gets really wacky. So Robert Bigelow, who's kind of helping the fund to the Stars Academy and was messing around with MUFON. People were not happy about all this, but I guess money talks, right? Now, a few years ago, he sold the ranch to an anonymous buyer who still, to this day, as far as I know, I don't think anybody knows who this person is. It remains unknown. So this is really, really weird that all of a sudden there's a TV show coming out about this. That's going to finally, we're finally going to see this. We're finally going to get to know a little bit more about this. I don't know who they're going to go to or who's going to like tour these people around. But as much as I don't really care too much about this, I'm really interested in the story. And I can't wait to actually watch this and find out a little bit more about Skinwalkers as well as Skinwalker Ranch. And according to the article on Inquisitor.com, the secret of Skinwalker Ranch is being developed for History Channel by Prometheus Entertainment and Letter 10 Productions, with A&E Networks holding worldwide distribution rights for The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. And as of yet, no release date has been announced regarding History Channel's The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. So I don't even know if they're filming it or what's going on. Hopefully, I mean, at this point, when they make an announcement like this, it's pretty much, there's got to be something in the can ready to go. So hopefully there's going to be, I'm hoping at least, you know, a 5-episode kind of thing. I wouldn't expect anything like more than 10 episodes on this, but I guarantee you probably at least 3. So this is going to be exciting. Keep a lookout for this, and I'll try to get the date to everyone as soon as I hear about it. So appreciate everybody listening in tonight here on the show, the Paranormal News Insider, and we will be back next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, the ears wide open there in the woods, and watch out behind you. I think there's something standing there. Keep that hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. Don't let your brains fall out. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.